Today on Snail Trail 4x4, Tyler talks about lubes, and Jimmy lights stuff on fire. You are listening to the Snail Trail 4x4 podcast, episode 2. And if you like going off-roading, wrenching on Toyotas, talking about Toyotas, making fun of Toyotas, or hearing about how awesome Toyota blinker fluid is, then this is the podcast for you. I'm your host today, Tyler, and sitting here on the other side of the shop is the one, the only, Jimmy Jett. Jimmy, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Tyler. Thanks for asking. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. Thank you for asking.
Yeah.
It's very nice to... When people care.
Yeah. I didn't really care. It's just a common formality, you know. It just kind of just rolls off the tongue back at you.
Well, I'm going to go play with the plasma cutter now.
You got one? I want one. I just have a grinding wheel.
Yeah, that'll do.
Angle grinder.
That'll do. You don't even have a shop press. We need to get you a shop press.
Okay. Listen, let's do it.
I'm down. Let's go. We'll be right back.
Yeah. Welcome back.
Oh, man. So that's cool. You're doing good. Have you been up to anything interesting, or have you just been kind of laying around doing nothing, or
I wish
all of the above?
Well, last week we talked about how I went to a beer fest the weekend prior.
Uh-huh.
This weekend.
Did you make a full recovery from that, by the way?
Yes, I did. Oh, actually, good. I don't really binge drink anymore.
You're getting
we
old
all
for that.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. It's like, yeah, I went through my 20s, you know, and went to college and everything, but I don't think that, like, it's, I'll have a bunch of beverages and, like, and when the evening comes around, I just kind of stop and drink water for a while, and you know, like, I'll go to bed and I'm not even, you know, don't have a buzz or anything. And I wake up and feel great. And everybody else is waking up around me like, oh, this is the worst day in my life. Like, I'm never doing this again. You know, and I'm like, hey, let's go do something. Like, yeah. What are we doing? You know,
let's go wheeling, guys.
Yeah. I don't know. I had fun when I was younger, but now it's just, I don't have fun having a hangover.
Yeah.
So I choose not to. Nice. But I was going to say that I went to a 40th birthday party this weekend.
Okay.
For a friend of the girlfriend's. And we did a bit of beer sampling. So it was fun.
Nice.
I did a little small pub crawl out in Folsom.
Okay. That's a good place to do a little pub crawl at. Were you downtown Folsom?
Yeah,
the old town?
Sutter Street. Yeah. Nice. There's a few cool little bars and places to get a drink down there. So it's fun.
Yep. That's cool. This weekend I was kind of similar. It was our buddy Brennan from Trail4R, trail4runner.com. It was his birthday. I'm not sure what. I never asked him what year his birthday or how old he is, I should say. We went out there, hung out at Folsom Lake, had a good time for the evening. So he ended up making everybody tacos. And I thought, I was like, this is kind of strange. It's his birthday. He's supplying all the food and cooking for everybody and everything. But he liked it. He enjoys cooking a lot. He enjoys cooking good tacos and hanging out with people. So that's what he got to do on his birthday. They were really good tacos.
Yeah. Nice.
He got the meat, al pastor from a little hole in the wall place in Rancho Cordova somewhere. And if you're familiar with Rancho Cordova in the Sacramento area of California, Rancho Cordova, there's some pretty interesting neighborhoods in Rancho you can find some super nice, authentic Mexican al pastor. So.
Ooh, nice. Yeah. I'll have to ask him where that was. I love that stuff.
Yeah. Well, I'll give it to you. I'll let you know afterwards. I know the name of the place.
Okay.
So, cool. Yeah. But so other than that, I've just been doing all my installing random stuff I got in all at once for the 4Runner.
Yeah, you got a bunch of goodies in.
Yeah, I did.
Tell me about them.
I got the tool drawer.
Okay.
So I got that all put in. I haven't put all my tools and spare parts in it yet because I need to line the bottom of it with foam or something first.
Okay.
So that my tools and everything don't rattle around on the aluminum drawers, but it's all aluminum. My problem I'm having with it, is that there's no real way to secure things to the top of it. because it's aluminum diamond plate, and I can't put like nut certs or rivets or anything into it because then it interrupts the drawers on the inside.
So wait, what do you mean secure things to the top of it? Like to put like an eye hook on the top?
Like put or? An eye hook or a D-ring or something like a, some kind
so
of tie
down. So you can lash things down to mm-hmm. it? Oh, okay.
And particularly my fridge.
Right.
So.
Well, and it's aluminum top.
And it's aluminum top, man.
Well, we could weld something on.
That's ultimately
that
what I'm going to come do.
But
yeah.
I do have friends that do.
Nice. That's what it's going to come down to is I was talking with Jason, the CJ5 guy,
mm-hmm.
That's doing Wheel and Wine and Whiskey, which, by the way, just side note, they recorded their first episode and it should be out live, I'm thinking, this week. So,
oh, that'd be cool.
Yeah, it's going to be hilarious listening to them. So, but anyways, I was talking with him and mm-hmm. he goes, just weld to whatever on top of it, and you can weld all your tie downs, weld E-track onto it. And I was like, oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
So he goes, yeah, just get some aluminum E-track, find someone that can weld aluminum and go to town. I was like, I like this idea. So I'm going to get some aluminum E-track and figure out how I want to position it all up. I got a aluminum fridge tray that pulls out and then it tilts down
right
once it's clear of the drawer.
Yeah,
so that'll be really nice to have. Shout out to DFG Off-Road.
Okay,
they great customer service. I ordered the thing on Sunday, this last Sunday, so yesterday. We're recording on a Monday today. I ordered from them. It was Sunday evening when I ordered it, like 7:30, mm-hmm. almost 8 p.m. at night, and apparently they had the wrong information, the wrong description of it up on the website, and the wrong price up on their website.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And the guy emails me and he goes, hey, just FYI, you know, we got your order, we'll ship it out, you know, just to let you know, it's labeled as the tilt one, but the pictures were all of the regular one. Which one did you want? I was like, I was looking for the tilt. I was hoping that it was just a mistake or something. He goes, okay, cool. He goes, all right, so there's actually a little bit of a difference in the price between the two. And so the tilt is this much more. And I was like, oh, that kind of sucks. I really wanted, you know, I pulled the trigger because the price you guys had listed. And he goes, you know what? Don't worry about it. And
we'll,
he was just,
we'll give
he,
it to yeah, you at this it, price.
Yeah.
There you go.
So, nice. Kudos, hats off to them. If anybody's looking for an aluminum, a nice lightweight, fridge drawer for a 50 to 65 quart fridge.
Mm-hmm.
Check these things out. So I'll let you guys know how it looks once it comes in. But the customer service of the company was awesome. So
cool. We'll put a link down for them down in the description.
Yeah, there's going to be quite a few links in this to show description today. So you'll see once we get to the topic, the show main. I guess we're going to start calling them campfire discussions.
Yeah.
Once we get around to that, you guys understand why. But so I got a fridge tray ordered. The tool drawer is in. I put my rock lights on and installed them and had a disco party in my driveway.
I saw a bunch of those photos.
Yeah.
I know why you chose the color you did, but the reason I like red is just because it's a good color for night vision.
Yeah. And those lights can do yellow and orange as well.
Yeah.
So I was thinking about, you know, I need to, once the snow all melts off, we mm-hmm. need to have a night trip.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll take over doing Signal Peak at night. Yeah. Go up there, have a nice night trip, and then I can test and play around with all the different colors. So
that'll be fun.
Yeah.
So how many colors can those rock lights actually do?
It's RGB, so it's the full range spectrum of colors.
Oh wow.
It's an app you can either put on your phone, or I also have it on my tablet now.
Yeah.
Because when I go off roading, I keep a tablet in there like a Tesla. So
that's what it is. The 1985
Tesla.
Yeah, 85 Tesla.
Forerunner Tesla. So I keep that in there. So I'll be able to play around with the lights through the tablet as I'm off-roading and wheeling. But it's just it's a circle dial, and you just kind of move your finger around the circle until you get to the color shade of color you're looking for.
Right. And I know you were, what we were talking off air, and you were telling me about how they just kind of mount straight to the frame rail, and you were concerned that the light wasn't going to actually go down. How'd that turn out?
So those were my concerns, and ended up being that I had that problem.
Okay.
So I mounted them straight to the frame rail, and it went more out instead of down. Mm-hmm. I didn't have a whole lot of light down on the ground there below the truck. So what I ended up doing was I have a ton of those flooring wedges you use when you install hardwood flooring.
Are they wood?
They're plastic.
Oh, okay.
But they're designed so you put the wedge in, then you push the hardwood floors up against the wall. so that you keep the hardwood floor even with the wall.
Okay.
So I have a bunch of those wedges left, and I ended up taking them, cutting them in half horizontally and taking the fat end of the wedge and putting it right behind the light so it angled the lights downwards.
Nice.
Yeah, and that worked out really, really well. Once I had that on, they showed up fantastically. They showed up awesome. So the install wasn't too bad. I had to drill the frame rails, and then they came with self-tapping screws.
Right.
So there were a couple of the screws where they didn't tap properly, and I had to redrill it. But other than that, it wasn't too bad. Running all the electrical wires was fun, just because I'm very particular about how I run my electrical wiring. They work great.
You're particular on how you run your wiring.
Yes.
And I've seen underneath your hood.
Well, not all the wiring was done by me underneath the hood.
There's a few rat's nests underneath
there. There's a few that I need to just take apart and completely redo.
Yeah.
I think I might end up doing that when I do my dual battery install. So
gotcha.
I reset up the whole electronic system of the 4Runner. But so I did those. Let me see the tool drawer. Oh, and then you and I worked on a project last week.
Yep.
Do you want to tell everybody about that, what we did?
Well, we were starting Tyler's Hydro Assist project. I listened to our own podcast, trying to get us another view. I don't know, or listen, download or whatever. I don't know how that works, but
that's really how we get our download rates, is we just sit there and listen to
we listen to re-download over and over. Side note completely. I did a little bit of research and I found out that, YouTube tracks your IP address. So if I change to a different IP address and mm-hmm. or a different account on Google in my house, mm-hmm. it doesn't count it as another view.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So I can't like switch to the 5 accounts and go play the video and get 5 views right as I post the video.
Until you start playing around on the dark web.
Yeah,
you
I know.
Spoof then your IP and whatever you want it to be.
Get a VPN going or something. Yeah. No. Okay. So going back to it. So on the last episode, we actually said we were going to finish your Hydro Assist.
Uh-huh.
We didn't come anywhere close.
No, we got about halfway done.
Pretty close. But, we decided not to tap Tyler's power steering box, and we decided that what it was is you want a spare power steering box too. So he Tyler went out and he bought a tapped box, and so we're gonna pull out the old box and we're gonna put in the new one that has tapped, and so that stopped us in our tracks, because we didn't have what we needed.
Yeah.
But what we were also going to do is we were going to, fix your smiling tie rod, from being bent on,
it was the weekend I did Slick Rock and Deer Valley like 5 times in 2 days, something like that, whatever it was.
So he bent his tie rod. So we put, do you know what size the original one was?
Small.
It was like,
I don't even know if it was an inch.
It was small. I think it had to have been an inch. But we did 1.5 with quarter wall and put in, went over to Rough Stuff and got some bungs and put those in there and threaded it all together and set it up. So we got his tie rod situated. So now we just need to get the power steering box in and then run the lines and the RAM.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yep. So it worked out well. Now my tie rod is about twice the size of my drag
rig.
It's pretty funny looking at pictures of it. So I'll post one up on Instagram. So you might have to go back a few days to look at it. But I'll post one up either today or tomorrow. So Monday or Tuesday of this week when you're listening to this episode. We did that. Other than that, we just had my other big thing I did this weekend was Skills Day.
Right.
Out of Prairie City.
Before we jump into Skills Day, can I talk about another project that we did together?
No, you may not.
Okay, never mind. Go ahead.
I was kidding. Go ahead.
So we put an O2 sensor in Samantha.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
Right. And remember, I was like, there's 2 sensors.
Uh-huh.
Right? There's one up and there's one down. We only found one.
Mm-hmm.
But I bought 2 sensors.
Okay.
But we only found one.
Yeah.
So I found the other one the other day.
Oh, really?
And it is it's a perfect plug-in setup.
Oh, nice.
Where the one that we were working on
had
blank wires on the end where we had to splice it all together and set it all up.
Yeah, it was really annoying.
Yeah, so, if anybody watches that video, there's actually a perfect O2 sensor for that job that actually has the correct plug on it.
Nice.
And you don't have to go through the wiring hassle that we had to do. So yeah. I thought that was a little funny because I just found it the other day and I was like, oh, here it is. This would have made a 5-minute video into a 30-second long video.
Yeah, seriously.
But it made for a better video.
Oh, yeah.
So
I thought that was kind of neat, though, because you can, with that kit that we did, you and I did, you can literally set up your O2 sensor for any plug out there.
Yeah, sure.
It's a universal kit. You just have to be able to look at the chart and read the chart properly and be very careful with it. But once you do, it'll work on any plug. So
we were fortunate to, like, there was only one colored wire in the setup, and on the sheet, there was only, for the most part, only one colored wire.
Yeah.
So it happened. It was easy for us to figure out which one the wire or the O2 sensor was that we were following.
But yeah. If you just have like one car that you're looking to set up with an O2 sensor, I definitely recommend just buying the correct plug.
Yeah.
It makes life a little way easier. But if you're running a shop somewhere or something, look into the ones that Jimmy put out that we did on the video for the O2 sensor, because it'll just cut down your inventory a ton. And once you do it enough times, you have it memorized and it's easy enough to set up.
I don't know. I might say get the correct plug and have more inventory and save
really?
The time. Because, I mean, how long did that take us? Maybe, I mean, if we weren't videoing and everything, it might have taken us 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Where if you just have the right plug, it would take you a minute.
A minute, 30 seconds, yeah.
If you can yank the bolts off. And for a shop, they're charging, you know, maybe half an hour.
Yeah.
Regardless.
That's true.
They'd make way more money that way.
Yeah, they can get like 5 jobs in and just by having the right one. Yeah, so I guess that's true. Buy the right plug.
Yeah.
Skip the kit.
Yeah. So, all right. So tell me about Skills Day, because I wasn't able to make it.
Skills Day was a lot of fun. It's an event put on by Metal Cloak. So they don't do any Toyota stuff yet. I'm still bugging Will and Mattson over there to make some Toyota stuff, and they just kind of laugh at me each time.
I've been trying to. I've been talking to, I know the, like, one of the main foremans or the shop guys, like, I know his brother, and I always go, like, are they making Toyota stuff now? Are they making Toyota stuff? No.
Yeah.
All right, fine.
So, they're really cool guys. They're literally right down the street from where I live, so I'll stop by randomly, say hi to them, or meet, run into them out on the trails, or run into them at randomly. I ran into them at a lunchtime at Jack's Urban Eats one day. I was like, hey, it's the Metal Cloak guys. What are you guys doing? They're good. They're fun guys. They had a nice meetup for beginners. It's their beginners clinic. So it's pretty much people who maybe just bought a Jeep or they're getting into off-roading and they want to learn, you know, how to put their vehicle in four-wheel drive.
Yeah.
Maybe they want to learn what it's like, what it feels like to hit a rock that you can't just drive over and you kind of have to finesse your way over it. So like anything bigger than a baseball, with some of those tires. So, just kind of like what it feels like to have the whole car stop and you have to force the vehicle up and over a rock kind of thing. So, what to do in certain situations with winching demonstrations.
Okay.
There was 15 kind of information booth set up and people had to go around to all 15 and get a little card checked off from each information booth.
This was at Prairie City, right?
Out at Prairie City.
Yeah. And so was the information booth all over the off-roading area, or was it all like,
it was all in one little area there.
All in the parking lot.
Yeah.
The upper, that would have been so cool to like put an information booth at the top of one of the hills and then on the far side, you know, it's like a poker running in a way, you know, and you'd have to drive to each of the spots to go get your information.
Yeah, that would be interesting. I know that when that particular day, Vora was also out there. So Valley Off-Road Racing Association.
Oh, okay.
And they were doing a test and tune, which is essentially, you know, tune your engine, tune your shocks, tune your suspension, and come out and race around the racetrack.
Oh, fun.
So in order to get to the back side of the 4x4 area, you have to go through the racetrack, and that would have been bad.
It was probably closed.
Yeah. So, that's a great idea. It was a fun day. I was out there for 6 hours doing ham radio information.
Mm-hmm.
So people got to ask a lot of questions about ham radio. I got the search and rescue guys nerding out over my APRS setup.
Oh, yeah.
So I think I'm going to end up getting together with those guys and helping them all
build APRS systems identical to mine in the search and rescue vehicles for El Dorado County.
Oh, cool.
So that'll be really fun. That's
Are
gonna
you
be a
gonna
fun
wire
project.
It up so that the hood is also canceling out on their vehicle?
Hopefully they don't have electric fan issues like I do. So So that'll be a lot of fun. There are a lot of really good questions. Mm-hmm. A lot of people that just they've heard, most people have heard of ham radio at least, which is kind of cool. As compared to like 2 years ago, most people were like, what are you talking about pigs for?
Well, I think, you know, for ham radio, there's an age description, or not discrepancy, but there's an age gap for that too. Because I think a lot of, probably more World War II or not, you know, war veterans back in the day, they knew what ham radio was, you know, because it was used a lot more then.
Yeah.
And then it kind of got dropped. You know, and it, you would have, then they probably went more back to Citizen Band Radio, CBs, right? Because they wanted to have some communications. But then, but I think it's becoming more popular now, just especially here on the West Coast.
Yeah.
Just because there are so many repeaters and everything set up out here that it's nice to have. So
it's a lot of access, a lot of infrastructure is already set up on the West Coast, throughout California, Oregon, Washington, Nevada, Utah.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of infrastructure set up. So because it's so easily attainable and accessible, it's pretty popular out here, which is kind of cool to see. So, we did a bunch of that. Got people asking questions about how licensing works.
Yeah.
What can you do once you have your license? So, it was a fun time.
Since I have it's the technician license. No, what do I have?
You have your technician license.
I have my technician's license.
Yep.
Can I technically like get a hold of another country, or do I have to have a slightly higher license in order to do that on purpose?
No, you can definitely get a hold of other countries through repeaters because repeaters are all getting connected through the internet nowadays.
Okay.
So you can, if you know the node number for a repeater in another country, absolutely you can dial it right up and connect to it with your technician license.
Right.
Now, if you want to talk to another country via RF through just pure radio waves, nothing else, you pretty much right now at least need to have at least a general's license.
Okay.
General license.
And that allows me to use a higher wattage?
No. Or you can still use the same amount of wattage. So it just allows you different frequencies. And the frequencies you get access to with a general license actually skips in our atmosphere.
Right.
And because of that skip, that propagation in the atmosphere, that's what causes radio signals to bounce around the world. So AM shortwave is that's what is happening with AM shortwave is when you can pick up, you know, an Indian AM shortwave station, you can listen to it on your in your house or something. That's what's happening. It's being propagated from India. So so you just get access to what's called HF, high frequency waves, which are the skip, the propagation waves. You, as a technician license, you do get a little bit of access to 10 meters, which does skip when you have more sunspots on the sun.
Oh, yeah.
The ability for radio waves to skip in the atmosphere correlates directly to how many sunspots we have on the sun. And usually the sunspot cycle is about 11 years long.
Okay.
So it takes roughly 11 years for sunspots to grow and dissipate. So usually right now, we're just coming out of the lull in sunspots and we're starting to ramp back up and getting more and more sunspots. So in about another 5-6 years, technician license will be able to get on 10 meters and talk to other countries.
Nice. I'll still have my license by then.
Yep.
I won't have to renew.
Yep. So it's pretty cool. There's a couple of 10 meter repeaters in the United States. So if once the sunspot cycle gets a little more active, then from the West Coast, you'll be able to talk from your vehicle. If you set up a 10 meter radio in your vehicle, you can talk from your vehicle into Europe.
From the West Coast?
From the West Coast, yeah.
Dang.
Through vehicles and repeaters, 10-meter repeaters. It's pretty damn cool. So, you just have to wait for the sunspot cycle to come back up and get more active.
I can talk to my family in Italy.
Exactly.
Cool.
So
let's go back to Metal Cloak. So, like things went well. People were asking about ham radio. Mm-hmm. What was the turnout?
Turnout was, you know, I did this back in 2017, and it was a huge turnout in 2017.
Yeah.
And this year, it was about half of what it was then.
Interesting.
And I thought that originally it was because that they split up the day into a beginners and then advanced group.
Yeah.
And so the beginners started out, and those were the ones going around all the information booths. But I didn't ever see like a clear set split between two different groups of people showing up and attending.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that ever actually happened, or if the beginners just stuck around, or if it happened and the advanced just didn't go around to the booths, the information booths, and they had a different kind of plan for those people. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was about half of what I remember in 2017.
So. Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Interesting.
Yep.
But it sounds like a fun time, and I think that's a good transition into us and saying what else is happening around the nation in the next few weeks. I know that some feedback actually that said our dates were way too long.
Oh, really?
And we should cut it back a little bit. So okay. I think we went 3 weeks last time, and we are going to cut it down. We decided on 2 weeks. We talked about it very briefly for the events happening around the nation Oh, North America, kind of, because we do have a Mexico or a Canada one in there.
That's true.
We're going to cut it down to 2 weeks.
It's tough. We're going to cut down to 2 weeks, see how that goes. It's just tough because we release episodes on Thursday mornings.
Yeah.
So if we only did 1 week, it's like people only get two days heads up, 1 day heads up to the event.
Mm-hmm.
So either that, or if 2 weeks still ends up being too much, then we'll just, when we release Thursday, we'll skip that weekend and talk about the next weekend.
Yeah, we could probably.
So we'll see. Let us know. Send us your feedback as to whether or not this is a good length for these or not. Or even if you don't really care about events going around, we can drop it all together if you guys don't want to hear about it. So,
or if you want your event mentioned, please please reach out. Podcast at snailtrail4x4.com.
Nice. So. Cool. So, coming up this weekend in a couple days here. So May 10th is the Ramsey's Crooked Creek 4WD Expo in, Harrison, Arkansas. Also going on May 10th is a beginner's recovery clinic at Hollister Hills. That one we did not have mentioned last week. So, if you're in the Bay Area in California, NorCal, head out to Hollister Hills. Esprit de Four is putting on a really fun beginner's recovery clinic. They do a really good job there. And the guy that's doing most of the talking is my CJ5 buddy, who's going to be running the Wheel and Wine and Whiskey podcast. So talk to him. You can see him. He's a hilarious dude. Also going on May 10th is Melina. Sorry, I take that back. The Beginner's Recovery Clinic is next weekend. I messed up that date. So the Beginner's Recovery Clinic at Hollister Hills is next weekend, the 17th. This weekend at Hollister Hills is the Melina Ghost Run. Held by Cal 4Wheel. The next weekend now, so this will be on May 15th, is the Go Topless Day at Crystal Beach, Texas. And then the 17th of May, that's the Beginner's Recovery Clinic at Hollister Hills. There's also an Ultra 4 race going on in San Felipe in Baja, Mexico, which is going to be freaking amazing. Can't wait to hear feedback from that one from people down there.
Oh, yeah.
Also, the 17th is a huge event called Overland Expo West in Flagstaff, Arizona. We talked a little bit about that last week. If you're within 10 hours drive of that, it's going to be worth going to.
Definitely.
It's going to be huge. It's going to be a lot of fun. There's going to be a ton of vendors out there, a lot of real cool show stuff to see what's going on in the Overland world, off-road camping world. Also, the 17th is Jeepapalooza in Comox Valley, British Columbia. So check that one out as well if you're up in the British Columbia area. And then on the 18th is the Jeepers Black and Blue Jamboree in Dover, Delaware. So check those out. Have a good time around the country. Let us know how those events are because, for now, we can't make it to all those events in the country. Yeah. But someday we'll be making the rounds.
I don't even know. Like, there's four things happening on that weekend. I don't know how the two of us would be able to do that.
We'll have to send the secretary.
Yeah. Well, it's like, okay, I'll hit the Ultra 4 race in Mexico and then drive up to Flagstaff.
I'll start at Hollister Hills and go up to British Columbia. And then we'll be back in the Sacramento area when we're all done. Those are the events. Let us know what you guys think of those. Definitely keep sending us your feedback on them. If you like them, if you don't like them, if you want to cut it down even more. So with that being said, my friends, I think that does it. And we are going to move right on over into this week's campfire discussions. So we have some fun topics for you. Take a listen to this fun little jingle. and we'll be right back. Welcome back, ladies, gents, and kiddos, to today's campfire discussion, where Jimmy and I discuss fire. Woo! I like fire. Did you upload
the pyro?
I am. You were the one lighting everything on fire the other day.
Yeah,
with my lighter.
I haven't edited that video yet.
That's a fun video. I have a fun little electric arcing lighter that I keep in the Forerunner, and I showed it to Jimmy, and he immediately started lighting everything he could on fire.
It's true.
For a video.
If we don't end up recording today, the video that we were discussing, then mm-hmm. I'll probably have that one come out on Tuesday.
Nice.
So tomorrow.
So cool. So for today's discussion, we're going to talk about kind of similar to an electric lighter is what are the top 10 things?
You're having a problem talking. Top 10 wheeling essentials.
Thank you, Jimmy. So what are the top 10 wheeling essentials? So essentially, what do you need to take with you when you're planning a trip, when you're going on a trip for a day, for an overnight, whatever mm-hmm. it is? So we came up with a nice little list of things. And within this list, it's more like a categorical list. And then within each one, we're like, okay, what are these essentials for these this item in this category, I guess. So
definitely.
Do you want to take it away? What our first one was?
Sure.
Okay, before, I'm going to cut you right off. You don't get to have the mic yet.
Dang it.
So what we kind of thought was, we're like, okay, so there's a rule of threes out there. So if you're used to being in the wilderness, going out in the wild or watched mm-hmm. wilderness things on YouTube, TV, whatever it is, there's a rule of threes. And it goes, essentially, you can go 3 minutes without air. You can go 3 hours without shelter. You can go 3 days without water and 3 weeks without food. So keeping this in mind, a lot of what we have to talk about on the list of recovery essentials kind of relates to, can relate back to these rules in one way or another.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And those are extreme situations.
Yeah. It's like the 3 hours without shelter. That's like if you're in the middle of a blizzard or something, you need to have some kind of shelter.
If you're on the top of Everest, you got about 3 hours.
Yeah.
But if you're sitting on the beach, obviously you're going to survive longer.
I have about 3 hours before I take a nap.
Yeah. Right. But that's always been a rule of mine for whenever I go out, wheeling or backpacking or anything. And it's just like, okay, I'm probably not going to have a problem with air unless mm-hmm. I'm like, going somewhere crazy like space or underwater. Water,
yeah,
but shelter, okay, that one does come into play right early in the game. So what am I going to be? That's, and this is how I'm like organizing my thoughts of when I'm going camping or where I'm going, right? Like, am I carrying something for some sort of shelter, like uh-huh. some sort of protection? If I'm stuck overnight randomly, mm-hmm. what am I doing, right? And then, okay, and then you fall into water, mm-hmm. which, okay, we can carry water since we're, we got vehicles, mm-hmm. we don't have to worry about getting water. And then food, it's like, where am I going? Is there going to be berries or trees or, am I eating pine needles or can I carry things with me? So that's a lot of how I usually think about preparing for a trip.
Have you eaten pine needles before?
I've made pine needle tea before.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I have eaten pine needles, just like sticking them in your mouth or whatever, but not for survival purposes. Oh, okay. Like picking your teeth, or whatever. Yeah. But pine needle tea is actually pretty good.
Okay.
Yeah. It's not so bad. But, so this leads us into what are our 10 essentials? And these are more kind of categories because we'll go more in depth into some of these, and what there are items deeper inside of here that could, you could choose or not to have or not to have. And I think that leads us into our first one, which is just recovery gear.
Yep.
Whether you need a strap or you need D-links or, a shackle block or, mm-hmm.
A tree saver or a winch or, maybe soft shackles if you don't want to have D-rings if you're going, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But essentially, some way to, if you get yourself in a situation, a way to get yourself out of that situation.
Absolutely.
So that's kind of the big thing is the self-recovery aspect. And along with that, a big one for me, which I always carry and I carry a plethora of, is rope.
Oh yeah.
So I carry different lengths, different widths, diameters, I guess, of rope.
Yeah.
Paracords, cotton ropes, you know, a lot of stuff. So tie down rope, straps, whatever.
What do you use all that? What's the purpose of having a bunch of ropes in recovery?
Random stuff, not just for recovery, but for like at the in camp recovery stuff.
So put a tarp up and get some shade.
They're multi use.
Absolutely.
Thing you can use for a lot of different things. Tourniquets.
One of my earliest jobs working was I worked for a construction company and they didn't use ratchet straps to tie anything down to trailers. They just used ropes.
Oh yeah.
And so I am quite handy with a rope.
Nice.
And tying knots, and like I know a lot of cool tricks with knots and like how to cinch things up and stuff like that.
I won't ask about how that works in your personal life, but we'll... Do you know how to tie you probably do, but do you know how to tie a bowline?
You know, I don't even know the names.
Really?
No, but I can tie a cool knot. That's
nice.
For sure.
That's a cool knot.
Yeah.
I got to teach you how to do a dragon bowline one of these days.
Sure, I can drag a bowline.
No, you, it's a dragon bowline. You just ruined it.
You tie the bowline and I'll drag it across the ground.
Exactly. Oh, man. That's one of my grandpa's favorite jokes is to how to tie a dragon bowline. He'll test people, especially people that are like, oh, no, I know every knot out there. He'll be like, okay, do you know a bowline? Yeah. Do you know a dragon bowline? They'll be like, no. He goes, here, give me a piece of rope. And he'll tie a bowline, and then he'll go walk and drag it on the ground behind him. He goes, there you go, dragon bowline.
I knew it. Totally. Yeah. Yeah, no. I don't... A lot of them are sailor's knots, because the owners were all sailors, and it's like, you know, all these knots that you use on a ship.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but they're totally practical. And
oh, totally.
Whenever you have a rope and you need to tie something up, and you know, people that just do like simple half hitches and they're like, okay, it's done. You're like, no.
Yeah.
Here, let me get my hands on
it. Two most useful knots you will ever use in the outdoors wilderness are going to be a bowline and a trucker's hitch.
Yeah.
So,
trucker's hitches are key.
Yes.
Those ones are, I actually know that.
Nice.
And I bet you if you showed me the bowline, I'd know it too.
Yeah.
But I just don't know it. So.
Yeah. So cool. Other than recovery stuff, the next one down is tools.
Yes.
So tools for your vehicle. Obviously, we are off-roaders. Pretty much everybody listening is off-roaders. I don't know. We may have some people that do backpacking and hiking or mountain biking as well. But I would imagine you still have to use your vehicle to get to those places. So tools is a big one.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that comes into stuff like a big one for me is a good tire plug kit. Because I don't carry a spare tire because my tires are too big to fit in my vehicle. But if you do have space for a spare tire, carry a spare tire, but also carry a plug kit. Plug kits are awesome. A basic socket set for, you know, 90% of the bolts on your vehicle. So know whether you need SAE or metric.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I carry a basic socket set and I carry a basic like box and wrench set because there's a many times that you need like 2 14 millimeters, you know, for some reason. And so you can use, you know, both of those and set it up so you can tighten whatever you're working on.
Yep. That's a good one. That's a good call, especially with studs.
Yes.
You need to have 2 wrenches to put studs together back in your vehicle. So speaking of, I had a stud. Sorry, tangent. I had a stud come out of my engine block on my exhaust.
Yeah.
So now my exhaust.
Where?
Right on the exhaust manifold.
Which one?
The one in the middle.
Okay.
So, now it just sounds like my whole engine's going.
Yeah. Lloyd has a stud. A stud came out on Lloyd.
Oh, really?
And it's the one closest to the firewall on the bottom.
Okay. Yeah, mine's like.
So I was wondering
in the
if it was the same one because that would be like, okay, that's odd.
Yeah. So, anyways, a socket set, a box end set, a breaker bar.
Definitely.
Is a really good one to have.
You know, I carry a torque. Why can't I think of a gauge, a torque wrench? There's the word I'm looking for. I carry a torque wrench with me, and I don't think I've ever used it.
Really? I use my torque wrench all the time.
I'm not out on the trail. I just kind of throw things together when I'm out on the trail. Like, you need it good enough, well enough put together so that you can get back to the trailhead.
Interesting.
You know, that's what always been my logic.
I've always just carried one because it's about the same size as a breaker bar, so it doesn't really take up that much more room.
No.
But I also drive in my vehicle to and from the trails all the time. And you do too, a lot of times too.
Yeah.
So.
You know, but I'm curious, and I don't have any way to, you know, prove if this is true or not, but I wonder if bouncing around inside of a toolbox out on the trail or whatnot will make the torque off on a torque wrench.
I imagine it would if it's like, if you don't have it in a case or anything and it's hitting all the other tools and getting jostled around.
That's how mine is.
Yeah.
How's yours?
keep mine in a little plastic case.
Oh, do you have yours in a case? Oh, you're fancy.
Yeah, I'm fancy. So the torque wrench, a shovel. Shovel is key.
That could be up in recovery gear too.
That's true. I mean, you can go both ways. Jump box or battery cables.
Yeah, that's a very important one, because especially if you're out solo and you're stuck overnight and you decide to, like, hey, I want to sit in the car and, you know,
run the heater or something,
usually your car's on when you're doing that, but, you know, or play music or do something and then the battery runs down and you're out there alone and you can't start your vehicle again. Jump box is good if you're going out with people. You know, cables are a good thing to carry too, but you know, if you're solo, jump box, totally.
Jump boxes are awesome. I've used mine quite a few times since I got it. So, not just on myself, on other people too. So, more Jeeps than anything else.
You know, I got another thing for recovery gear.
Yeah.
Can we bounce back for a sec?
Sure.
Fire extinguisher.
Oh, key. You have to have one of those. And make sure that it's not just a fire extinguisher, but that it has enough capacity to put out like a full blown engine fire or something. So
not just a little dinky one.
Like,
they make these weird ones now that are super small and it's just like a powder. You seen those? And they're like, it'll work. It kind of like expands and blows it up and stops the air. It doesn't like expand like the foam, but it kind of like, I don't know. It was weird when I was reading about it.
Well, I know that they have powder-based ones for grease fires, which are what you're supposed to have in your kitchens at your house. And which would make a sense on a vehicle, too, because there's lots of grease and oil and stuff around. So
Nobody's leaking oil.
No, nobody.
Yeah.
So those, and then I also threw on there some kind of way to inflate and deflate your tires. Just because once you're off-roading, the best way to get traction, easiest, cheapest way to get traction is to let air out of your tires.
So
I am partial to more flates, but...
You know, deflating your tires is a great way to, you know, get yourself out of a out of the tricky situation.
That's true. You don't
necessarily need to inflate your tire.
No.
You just have to be, you drive slower on the road. I mean, in dire straits, right? Where like, you know, like if I'm all alone, nobody's out on the Rubicon and I'm stuck and then I air down and I can get myself out. You can drive on a like 5-10 PSI tire. You know, down the hill to a gas station. You know, you just, the one thing you want to make sure is that the rim is not rubbing on the tire. As long as it's up enough, then you can drive on it. It's not going to be good for the tire.
You're going to wear out your tire. It's going to be super.
But in worst case scenario situations, it's something you can do.
So yeah. That's a good one thing there too. Lots of different options out there for in deflation. So there's the ARB Easy Deflators. You can get knockoffs for like $20-25 on Amazon.
You can pull the stems.
You can pull the valve cores out. There's lots of different, the Staun Easy Deflators. Those too. So there's lots of different options out there. So find out what works for you, what's best for you and your situation. So
Definitely.
Next on our list is
fluids,
or as I like to call them, lubes.
I'm not gonna, once again, we're not going into personal life. No, you gotta, I mean, if you do have a problem out there and you do lose fluids, then you're gonna need to fix them and add more fluids. And, you know, or people burn oil, and so you might want to have spare oil on hand, you know, put oil in. I carry a full set of oil, like full chunk of oil
to completely
fill
engine.
And, you know, I would say, and some power steering fluid, and all, I carry automatic transmission fluid and I have a manual, but a lot of it isn't for me. Like I would say that I would maybe have used a quart or so of oil out on the trail. And then all the other fluids that I've ever used have been for other people. You know, but, gear oil is also a really good thing to carry along.
Gear oil is a big one.
And once again, you know, this is, for me, it's more of a bare minimum. Like, what is the minimum stuff that I'm going to need to get me off the trail? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't need to carry enough gear oil for both of my axles.
Yeah.
You know, the what is the likelihood that both of your axles are going to go out?
Uh-huh.
You know, and then you have to fill them with gear oil. And, you know, and even then you don't have to fully fill them, you know, yeah. just to get off the trail.
Yep.
You know. So, other things that I like to carry in that one is like just carb cleaner, WD-40.
Yep.
I carry a CV grease and, stuff along those lines. Just some basic fluids that, mm-hmm. you know, to clean stuff off, brake cleaner, you know, and to be able to lube it back up.
Yep. That's a good call. Brake fluid is another good one you should always have, because it's
I've
too
had
easy.
To use that one.
Yep. I've been on multiple trips now where people blew a brake line or ripped a brake line or something, and you know, you got to clamp it off, reseal it, and then add new, more brake fluid in. So, JB Weld is another good one to carry around. You can do a lot of different trail fixes with that stuff. And then, I put in as well a transfer pump.
Oh, that's clever.
So, I've been out on the trail a couple times where I was like, I can't you get the oil into the transmission because you just can't get the bottle in the right position.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to, what I ended up doing was, taking a Ziploc bag, cause I keep Ziploc baggies in my camping equipment, cut the hole off of, the, or cut the corner off into, and then transfer it in through there that way.
Right. I carry a funnel with me.
A funnel. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think I have a funnel in my car stuff. I don't know if I do actually.
Yeah.
But I have a transfer pump. So.
Yeah. And another thing that might fall into, once again, going back now that you're making me think, you know, we're talking about it more. Another thing that could be a tool or a recovery tool is, I bring a jack stand.
Oh yeah. That's a good one. Do you, take a bottle jack or a high lift?
I carry a high lift jack, but I carry a jack stand.
Oh, okay.
Also.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, if I need to pull the tire off, I'm not trying to find a stump to, like, slide underneath it. I actually have a jack stand that will hold up. So,
yep. I was carrying jack stands, two of them, for a while. And then I stopped because I ran out of room. But now I have my tool drawers. I'll start carrying them again.
Yeah. I've there's situations when it's nice to have two.
Mm-hmm.
But I've found that, like,
you're typically just very.
Yeah,
unlikely.
if you're gonna need two, you can do one side at a time.
That's true.
You know, or if it's, you know, for the most part, you know, like maybe if you have to pull a third member out and you need to pull both axles out, so you have to lift it both up, you don't necessarily have to have, you know, like you could find something else for the other tire.
That's true.
You know, for me, it's always been like, I can almost always find one thing to jack, you know, to hold the axle up with. Like maybe I'll put it on a rock on one end and then a jack stand on the other, you know, or something. So I've only ever carried one.
Cool. So next point number or category is communications.
Yeah. Like,
so like ham radios. The big part here is to just be able to have some way to get in touch with either a Lifelight or search and rescue if you need it. Ham radio, especially in the United States, pretty much a go-to option. You're going to be good. It's inexpensive compared to other options out there. The other big option is a Garmin InReach.
Yeah.
So an InReach works off satellites. Ham radio works off radios and repeaters. Especially if you have an APRS set up for ham radio, APRS signals go really, really far. So, and there's more APRS receivers and repeaters set up than regular voice repeaters. So,
really?
Yeah.
Dang.
That's why APRS does work so well, especially for off-roaders and anything you're doing in the outdoors. So, ham radio or like a Garmin InReach that works off satellites. So,
yeah.
And did you have any others for communications? Any other things you can think of?
Well, I mean, you could have like a CB because they do have an emergency channel. Now, whether, you know, we're not on the CB bandwagon.
Yeah.
But, you know, they do have an emergency channel. They do have a weather channel that, you know, they send stuff out. And that's both of those would be good things to know and have in a, you know, if you don't have a ham radio. Especially weather. Mm-hmm. I mean, weather is a good thing to know ahead of time. So
weather's a good one. There's national simplex channels, national call simplex channels on ham radio. And this is a fun rule I just learned recently, surprisingly.
Okay.
On the two national simplex channels, one for 2 meters, one for 70 centimeters, the rule is if you're lost or out in the outdoors, you should switch to those national calls channels at the top of the hour for the first 5 minutes of the hour.
And you can message in and say,
and that's help. when if somebody's stuck or lost or need help, that's when you can all kind of get in touch with each other, have one common place to meet up and check and see if anybody needs any help in the backwoods or anywhere.
Oh,
so
cool.
If you're stuck or lost anywhere and you have a ham radio, get on the national call simplex channels,
at the top
of the hour for the first 5 minutes. So
cool.
Yep.
So our next one leading us down is, number five, which is spare parts. These aren't in any order. We just kind of are going for 10 items here, but the fifth one down is spare parts,
mm-hmm.
which
spare parts can go a ton of different ways. Mm-hmm. I have a good buddy who drives an early generation Bronco that can literally rebuild his entire Bronco on the trail if he wanted to with how many spare parts he carries.
That's crazy.
He carries a perfectly matched tie rod, drag link, coils, shocks, drive shafts, mm-hmm. axle shafts. Like, he can literally rebuild his Bronco on the trail. It's pretty funny.
Right.
But I don't think people necessarily need to go to that length, but you do need to kind of have the common parts that will typically break on you. Like on Toyotas, what's the most common thing that you see broken on the trail, Jimmy?
Probably knuckles.
Knuckles?
Mm-hmm.
Knuckles.
Knuckle studs.
Knuckle studs.
And,
okay.
Or steering arms mm-hmm. breaking off the knuckle studs.
Yep.
That's been one of the most, the things that I see the most often. And the prime candidate to that is people aren't checking their torsion, the torque, or the tightness on the knuckles uh-huh. and those studs and those bolts.
That makes sense.
With those nuts. And so, if you're checking it and they're tight, they're not going to break. Once they loosen up,
yeah.
then the steering arm is going to move around, and that's when you shear those off.
Yeah.
And so I actually carry a whole spare set for a
oh,
knuckle.
Really? I don't carry any knuckle studs. I probably should.
Yeah. And I've been on a few trail rides where I've just handed them out and be like, okay, here you go. Here's a bunch of them.
Nice.
You know? I don't give them the nice, real like ARP or whatever those are, those nice heavy duty ones. But
Ace Hardware Grade Fives,
yeah, something. But no, I mean that I carry almost everything to repair one knuckle.
Nice, okay.
On my rig, and then I carry spare drive shafts, and I carry a spare long side of my axle dry axle shaft.
Yeah, okay.
Because the long side is known to break way more often than the short side.
Cool. That's good to know.
Mm-hmm.
I know that a lot of Jeeps, like the most common Jeep issue out there is U-joints.
Yeah.
So it's just the mm-hmm. way the axles are. They have U-joints instead of Burfield. So popping U-joints in axles is a very common Jeep thing. So carry U-joints with you. Figure out what's in your axles and carry those, a full set of them. Carry what's in your drive shafts. Especially drive shafts, because, you know, in Toyotas, we just don't have power.
Right.
We don't have enough power to break U-joints in our drive shafts.
Right.
But
yeah, and a lot of this comes, I mean, you know, you're going to go out wheeling and you're going to know your rig.
Yeah.
And you're going to know where the fail points are on it or mm-hmm. what's more likely to break or least likely to break. And, you know, after you wheel a long time with your vehicle, you're going to know, like, these are the fail problems on this rig or this type of rig. And those are what you're going to carry.
Yeah. Like for me, my fail point is going to be my hubs.
Okay.
On my 4Runner.
Yeah.
So either my hubs or my ring and pinion.
I don't carry spare hubs, but I carry drive flanges.
Yep, that's what I do too. I carry one drive flange.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't carry two, which is whatever.
Which it's smaller, it's less parts, mm-hmm. and you know, and those aren't going to break because there's no moving parts to it.
Yeah,
you're just literally like bolting the axle shaft to the tire.
Yep,
more or less. And and so, those are great to carry as spares. I carry a full set because it's like half the size of,
of one hub. Yeah.
You know, and it's like worst case scenario, if I break both hubs for some reason, I can just bolt those on and no space taken up, not a lot of weight.
Yeah.
So those are a good thing to have.
Cool. So our next thing, our next number six item is going to be overnight camping essentials.
Mm-hmm.
So this is stuff like your sleeping bag, something to sleep in, keep you warm, a shelter. So something to escape the elements in, which could be your vehicle if that's if you need it to be. Something to make a fire with. So something to have heat. If you know you have enough gas in your vehicle and you know that help is on the way and they'll be there the next day or something, run the heater in your vehicle. But otherwise, have some way to create a fire of some sort. So some kind of ignition lighter, windproof matches or windproof candles work great for those situations.
I have a whole emergency bag that I carry with me. It's like just this. It's I have this little bag that goes with me every time I go out backpacking or out on the trails or, you know, go out on a weekend trip of some sort. You know, I carry this bag with me, and it's got stormproof matches, blowout candles.
Mm-hmm.
It has some moleskin in it. It has a very bare essential, like it has some small aspirin and has some Neosporin and Band-Aids and moleskin in there. Just some like very basic things. And one of the things I have in there is an emergency blanket as well. I actually carry the Bibby sack version because I use it a lot for when I was doing mountaineering and rock climbing and climbing the mountains, and so I wanted a full wrap in case of an emergency.
Mm-hmm.
But even just an emergency blanket is a really good thing to have.
Definitely
another thing I also carry in camping gear is toilet paper.
That's a key one. I carry it as well. At all times, not just overnight camping stuff.
And I think something we should state here is that this, you know, whether you're going out on a day trip or a weekend adventure, you should take into an account of what if you do not or are not able to make it back that night. You know, kind of plan for like carry. I always carry extra food. I think we come down to that.
Don't be
later.
Jumping ahead.
Sorry. That's next. So let's just jump to it.
Sounds good.
Number
good transition,
seven.
Jimmy.
I always carry extra food with me.
Yeah.
And, you know, and whether it's a few extra bars or another sandwich or something, you know, like food is one of those things where I just wouldn't want to have, you know, go without it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I'm a fat boy at heart. Like, you know, I want to eat.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so jumping back to camping, you know, you know, it's not hard to just throw a sleeping bag back there, you know, especially I have like my camping sleeping bags pack up small.
Yeah. They pack up, especially if you're into backpacking. You look at how tightly things and small things can pack down to.
Mm-hmm.
Just get a little backpacking sleeping bag and throw it the back of your rig somewhere.
Just toss that in, toss in an extra, you know, some things to keep you warm or, you know, the fire equipment or, you know, some extra food and things of that nature. So, you know, just go prepared, you know, and just be smart of, you know, what if something happened and I have to stay out there longer?
Yep.
I know that we talked on another podcast about how you were out on a recovery out on Fordyce and you had all the gear in case you needed to spend a few days out there.
Yep. We were planning on only being out there one day, but I was like, I don't care. I'm going to pack in case I'm out here. I'm going to pack. I'm going to be out here 4 days. So.
Yeah. It was a snow recovery. Yeah. I didn't state that. It was a snowy winter recovery adventure. And, you know, it's like, I don't know what I'm going to get myself into. I don't know if I'm going to have to hunker down and the weather's going to be bad, or, you know, I don't know if I'm going to be able to go in and out in a few hours.
Yep.
You know, and you know, if you're planning on going in and out in a few hours, but then you have to spend 4 days, you know, you're going to be happy you kept packed extra. What's the Boy Scout? I'm not a Boy Scout, but what's the Boy Scout motto? It's go prepared.
Be prepared. I like to think of it as prepare for the worst, hope for the best.
Yeah.
So prepare for the worst, hope for the best.
Definitely. Yeah. All right. Did you have anything else on water? I know I do have one more thing on
water or food or overnight camping.
Oh, food.
Food.
I'm all over the place.
I was going to say, you've been hitting like four of them right there. No, for food, I keep a trail mix. and little cracker packs.
Yeah.
Behind the driver's seat with bottles of water.
So MREs.
MREs, essentially, yeah. So
I carry,
keep at all times, you know, 12 bottles of water and trail mix.
That's
and cracker snacks or granola bars, whatever it is.
I carry, I always have at least one dehydrated meal with me.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Nice.
And the thing is with those is you don't have to heat up the water.
Yeah.
The water, you can add cold water to it. Mm-hmm. It'll just take a little longer to dehydrate.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and for the most part, if I'm in that situation, I'm not going to care.
Yeah.
If it's completely dehydrated.
There's really cool, dehydrated, meal packs that have, a chemical in it, and what you do is you just add water to this chemical, and it gets hot. And it boils almost immediately.
Yeah.
So you add a little bit of drinking water into your dehydrated meal, and then add a little bit of non-potable water, whatever you have laying around.
Mm-hmm.
What survival people do is they'll actually pee.
Okay.
They'll save their pee and pee into the chemical, and it heats up and boils your meal, so you get a nice hot
pee meal.
No, the pee doesn't get in your meal at all.
Oh.
It's all separate.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's
good.
In a separate bag. It just
<All right>.
Yeah. You're just using it to kick in that chemical that makes everything boil and get hot, and then it boils the inside bag, which is where your meal's at.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't know about that.
We'll see if we can find some of those and add those into the show description down below. Or in your podcasting thing there. So that was all I had to add to those. Clothes though.
Are we going? We're going there.
Oh, I had clothes before food and water.
Did you?
Why don't you get coordinated here, Jimmy?
Dang it! Clothes. Let's jump to clothes.
Clothes. And this was mainly like prepare clothes for where you're going to be, the trip and style you're going to be doing. So if you're going snow wheeling or adventuring in the snow, camping in the snow, don't bring flip flops.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of stuff. So
yeah.
I always carry a snow/rain jacket, something that'll keep me warm in no matter how wet it is outside.
Yep.
And I also carry kind of like a windbreaker style jacket that'll just keep me warm if it's a little bit windy outside, not too, not very super cold or wet kind of thing.
Right.
So I have two of those in my rig at all times. Dry socks is a big one.
I always carry extra socks.
I do too. I'm a huge fan.
Especially in the backpacking world, I carried a pair of socks that I slept in.
Oh yeah.
Because, one, your feet are cold and you're in a sleeping bag usually and in a tent and not completely, but it's all like if you're hiking and you're sweating and you're sweating in your feet and your socks are going to get a little wet and they might feel dry, but when you pull your socks off and then you put on a dry pair of socks, and that for me it's usually my night socks, but it's so nice.
Yep. And that's a big thing. Like anytime you are, like Jimmy said, if you're out hiking for a day or off-roading for a day or just even wearing shoes for a full day, if you're going to be at any way, shape, or form, even still, I'm going to say no matter what, wear new, fresh pair of dry socks every single night. Because your feet need to dry out. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you start getting fungus. And if your feet, you know, get torn up because of fungus and not being able to dry out, you're done. We depend too much on walking as human beings. So, it just helps you sleep better. It helps your feet stay warmer, being completely dry in a fresh pair of socks. So, anytime you're going out, bring as many fresh pair of socks as nights, that you'll be going, in my opinion, if you're off-roading, at least. If you're backpacking, maybe like Jimmy said, keep one as your night pair and then throw on your other ones during the day.
Yeah. So, well, it's a extremely thick wool sock.
Yeah.
And it's not something I'm going to hike in.
Oh, okay.
And it's nice to have because most of the time, or a lot of the times when I'm backpacking, it's, you know, and a lot of the times when I'm backpacking, it's winter outside.
Okay.
I love snow camping.
I've still never been snow camping.
Yeah. And
I need
to
go hang out in the Taj Mahal, man.
Yeah. No, definitely. Yeah, the Hilton.
The Hilton, that's what it is.
Yeah, it's really nice. But most of the time, like, it's cold outside, and so you're not hanging, we're not hanging out outside of the tent.
Yeah.
And so when it's like, you know, and we choose to go at stupid times, I think, too. Like, but it's most of the time, it's not the best of weather.
And well, that's so the best time to go.
Yeah. So we're sitting in the tent, right? And so I'm not usually in the sleeping bag at that point, you know, so I have this super thick wool sock that I just throw on my feet to keep things warm, dry set of socks. It's warm and thick and wool. And yeah, I just carry them with me.
Nice.
Fun fact. Here's my fun fact of the episode.
Okay.
There's two natural fibers that keep you warm even when they're wet.
Wool.
And?
What's the other one?
Yes, to
possum.
Wool.
Possum, isn't it? Possum fur?
No.
Okay.
It's silk.
Oh, really?
Yep.
I would not have thought of that. Yep.
Wool and silk, even when they're wet, they will still keep you warm.
Hmm.
Things like cotton and things
cotton
of that
does
nature.
Not.
Yeah, it just, it doesn't hold heat.
No.
So.
I really like, oh my gosh, I'm not going to be able to think of it now. So we'll just skip it.
All right.
I have a sweater that I would wear whitewater rafting all the time during when I was doing spring water rafting.
Yeah.
Because it's... It was a wool material, but it's not wool. I forget what it is now.
Yeah.
But it stayed warm even when it was soaking wet in the river. So
I think in regards to clothes, though, it's you know, look at what the night lows are going to be.
Yeah.
And think about what you might want to have on you if you have to sleep outside.
Yeah.
Overnight.
That's a good point. It's a good way to look at it.
Yeah, maybe if it's the middle of summer, especially out here in Sacramento, where it doesn't get, you know, it gets into sometimes into the 90s at night, you know, you might want a very light sweatshirt.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you're, you know, going somewhere and it's going to be below freezing, you might want different clothes entirely. Yeah. So,
cool. Good point. Good thing to plan for your trips. I think we covered food pretty well. Water.
We did. Yeah, food. Can I let's before we jump over to water? Okay. There's a cooler or not a cooler for foods are especially while we're for us off roading, you know, or a fridge or some nature. So you can think of if you have a cooler or not, I for day trips, food wise, a lot of times I don't even carry a cooler.
Yeah.
Right. I'm not too terribly concerned. I'll be honest. Most of the time, my cooler is so I can have cold beer.
Yeah.
Right.
That's what mine is for.
Really, all it's for. Most of the food that I actually carry, I don't use a cooler. Like I have dried salamis, some cheeses and breads and things and chips and things like that, where you don't need to have them in a cooler.
Yeah.
Right. And so, but just something to take into account, whether, you know, like how long is a cooler going to last? If you're going to, like, if you have perishable foods and you're going somewhere, you know, you need to think about those things too.
Cool. Good points.
All right.
It's water.
Yes.
Number nine?
This is number nine. Yep.
Number nine, water.
I mean, you're the one counting because I'm all over the place.
So water, the general rule, we kind of did a tiny little bit of research. We found two general rules when it comes to water. Well, I guess three. One is you can last 3 days without water.
Okay.
And then the other one is you generally want to bring and prepare for trips to bring 2 gallons of water per person per day that you're going to be gone. Jimmy has heard it before in terms of however many pounds you weigh.
Yeah.
That's how many ounces of water you should bring per day.
Mm-hmm.
So like for me, I weigh... 195 pounds. So I should be bringing, if you do all the math out on it, we figured out I should be bringing
196
gallons.
Ounces.
Sorry.
And when
there's 196 ounces.
Yeah. Or there's, five. Yeah. Whatever it is. And then when we did the math, it came out to be about 3 gallons.
Yep. About 3 gallons of water for me.
And granted, I mean, like, I don't drink that much water anyway. You know, so, you know, but take into that account, but do prepare to have, you know, excess water. I almost always bring a 3 gallon jug of water with me.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a reusable thing that I can just close up and has a little spigot on it. And, you know, and it's just works great to have a bunch of excess water.
Yep. I agree. That's
how do you,
one thing.
That's an interesting.
I usually bring a lot of water with me because I drink a lot of water when I'm on the trail. I just, for some reason, I get thirsty when I'm off-roading a lot. And so I will, before I go on a trip, if I'm going to do 2-day trip,
yeah,
I will bring 4 gallons of water and then a 48 pack of 16.9 ounce water bottles.
Right. I was going to ask what do you do for your water? How do you carry it?
Yeah.
I carry a 3-gallon thing of water.
Mm-hmm.
That's just, and it more or less, it's sort of just backup.
Yeah.
And or wash your dishes or your hands randomly. And I go out and buy is it 48? The like flat of water.
Yeah.
I buy one of those too. Yep. And I only ever usually go through like a quarter or a half.
Yeah.
And then I leave them here in the shop and we drink them while we're all working.
Yeah.
I've been doing just that, mm-hmm. the 16.9 ounces bottles of water. And, those seem to work really well.
Yep. I've been finding they work really well. I make a trash bag for recyclable stuff when I'm out camping.
Mm-hmm.
So I just throw them all in when I get back home. I throw them all out the recycling. So it works well.
I also carry in my a midget emergency bag.
You carrying your midget? carrying midgets around?
My midget. In my emergency bag, I carry iodine tablets.
Oh, that's a good one. Because that was going to be my question to you of what do you do for if you end up running out of water?
Yeah. Well, I carry in my emergency bag because it's light, compact, and like I was saying, I mainly use it for backpacking.
Yeah.
I carry iodine tablets.
It's a good call. I carry a Life Straw.
Yeah. I have a Life Straw in my car camping gear.
Nice.
Also.
Nice.
So, I also have, when I go out car camping, I put my emergency pack in there.
Yeah.
Also, you know, so I have iodine tablets and I have that Life Straw.
Nice.
The Life Straws are cool.
They're freaking awesome.
Yeah.
I've used it once and I was like, this thing works pretty cool. Like, there's not a whole lot of there's not a lot of resistance to drinking it. It's not like you're trying to suck
it's
and
not like it just sucking up a milkshake.
Exactly. Thank you. It works pretty well. I've been pretty impressed with those. So I have a spare Life Straw at home just in case I lose mine or leave it somewhere. So
yeah, I don't know this. I'm going to ask you a question. I don't know the answer off my head.
Okay,
but maybe you do. Do you know how long you should boil water?
I think
it's inert.
That's a good question. I believe it's just a few minutes boiling.
I think it's like 3 minutes.
Yeah, it's not a whole long time because it pretty much as soon as it gets to that temperature, it kills all the bacteria, just dies off.
Yeah, but you have to go a little longer just to make sure it's killed or something. But
I would
that's
be safe, go 5 minutes boiling.
Something like that.
Yeah,
research it. So we'll research it too.
Yeah.
But I'm bringing that up because if you have gas and you have a fire but you don't have any water, you know, you can always make pure water if you have a water source around you.
Yep. Have you ever tried to make or had to make a solar still?
No, I haven't.
I've always wanted to do that.
I've wanted to learn how to collect moisture out of the air in the desert.
You can, do you know how to do that? The best
way?
Dig
a hole and then you like drape something over it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if
usually
it's elevated.
Plastic.
Yeah. Plastic, clear plastic.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't, but is it elevated off of the ground just slightly so that, or is it
essentially
just cover the hole flat?
You just have to cover the hole and then you want, something. That was weird.
Feedback.
You want something
in the middle of the tarp. Hole.
To keep the tarp kind of pointing downwards so that all the condensation that forms on your tarp goes and rolls down to that central point and then drips into a cup that you have in there.
Yeah.
So if one thing is if you can't dig down far enough and get to a moisture ground, you can pee in the hole.
Okay.
And then put your cup in the middle of it so that your urine doesn't get into the cup.
Right.
And what it does is the heat from there brings all the moisture out of your urine and it condenses on the tarp and then all that will then drip down into your cup and that's all pure water.
You know, this episode's turning into a lot of urine talk.
I know. It's amazing what you can do with urine when you're in survival mode.
Yeah. What's that movie? 157 hours or whatever it is.
It's like something like that.
I couldn't finish that movie.
Really?
Uh-uh.
I thought it was fascinating.
Yeah. When he like goes and starts cutting and then there's the noises. It's like tang, tang going on. I turned white. I started cold sweats because I put myself into those situations.
Okay.
So I literally was feeling like, oh crud, what if I'm in that situation?
Yeah.
I don't know if I could do that. Like I rewatched it later and was able to finish it, but Yeah, I had a really hard time with that.
That's crazy what people do when you need to do it. So, yeah. Number 10.
Numero
10 is a maps or compass. Maps and compass, preferably. So, I've gotten to the point where most of the places I go off-roading, I don't plan too many like week-long trips.
Yeah.
I might do a week-long trip every year, every 2 years, something like that. But for the most part, I go to places just because we're blessed and awesome here in NorCal to have the Sierras right here. Yeah. We're really easy access into the Sierras. So everything I do in the Sierras, I know I could hike out within a few days if I needed to. So I have a bunch of offline maps loaded of different sources. So I have three different types of offline maps downloaded on my phone and my tablets at all times. So with those alone, as long as, you know, they stay charged, then I can get myself out of the situations. So that's where my jump box, I have a jump box that, comes in handy. You know, the engine of the vehicle, you can, you know, wire up something to charge your phone.
Yep.
Use your just base electrical system of the engine, I guess. So yeah, there's different ways. As long as those stay charged, I can get myself out. And luckily, I try and make sure that I stay in places where I can get out within 2 to 3 days if I need to.
Right.
So
you also have the APRS. So if, you know, if you're in a location, you can also, people will know that where you are. One of the things I want to touch on, I mean, even just having a paper map is a good thing, but if you can even upgrade that paper map to a topo map.
Yeah, topo maps are awesome.
That's huge. Really good. And just getting a little basic understanding, you know, they're pretty self-explanatory, but just having a very base understanding of like what the lines mean, what the thicker line and the thinner lines mean, when the lines are super close or really far away, you know, and then when you pair that with a compass, you know, and understand how to find what direction you're currently looking and which direction you need to go, you know, that helps out a lot. You know, I've got another thing on this, on number 10 here that we didn't mark down on our list.
Yeah.
Is telling somebody where you're going before you leave.
Eh, that's overrated.
Right?
No, because that's a huge one. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, so say, hey, mom and dad, I'm headed out here. You know, I'm going to the Rubicon this weekend.
Yeah.
You know, and then if they go, hey, you know, I haven't seen Jimmy in like 5 days. Yeah. I wonder where he is. You know, oh, day six is here. Where was he? Oh, he was out on the Rubicon. We need to start talking about somebody to go out to the Rubicon and find him. You know, somebody knows where you are. And, you know, along those lines, you know, is tell them when you're expected to be home, tell them when you're leaving, check in time, things of that nature. And so that, you know, if you're not showing up or you haven't checked in or you haven't reported back, that they can send help if needed.
Now, that's a good point. I really like the check-in one, especially. If you and your spouse or whoever you're checking in with are ham radio operators, it makes it very easy to say, hey, no matter what I'm doing while I'm gone at 6 p.m., let's get on the repeater and we'll check in. And if you don't hear from me by 6:15, then something bad has happened to send help.
Right.
Kind of thing. And I have a couple of friends that do that. And they do it awesome. They do it really well. They live in the Bay Area, but they go wheeling up in the Rubicon and Fordyce all the time.
Right.
And they have a 6 p.m. check-in time with each other.
Every day.
Every day. Yeah. So, it just kind of takes that even. So if that way, if you need help, you're not getting help 4 days after you need it, kind of thing. You're getting it as soon as you need it. So if you can do that, have a check-in time or a check-in point, then you follow it. It works really well as well. So
nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that also depends on who you're with or what's going on.
Yeah.
You know, cause it seems a bit extravagant if I'm with five other rigs.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, every night I have a check-in time, you know, it's like, well, I'm with a bunch of other people that have, you know, like if somebody needs to drive out, then we can have somebody still drive out or, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
So in my eyes, it'd be like, if you don't hear from me by 6 p.m. on the Sunday, you know, then send help.
Yeah. So whatever's more comfortable for you and your significant others.
Well, and I think that kind of goes along with this whole entire list. You know, you do need to find your comfort.
True.
You know, like we listed, you know, we had 10 things on this list. We had recovery, tools, fluids, or lube. communications, spare parts, camping essentials, clothing, food, water, and maps and compass.
Yeah.
But what we say isn't the exact answer for everybody.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to have different parts or different tools, different camping essentials, different things, creature comforts that you're going to want, you know. We're just trying to give people ideas.
So with that, that wraps up our campfire discussion for today. So, hope you guys enjoyed it. Definitely, like Jimmy said, it's to help kind of spur the conversation. Get it going, talk with your buddies, you know, see what figures out what works best for you. Try some things. If it doesn't work out, then don't do it and try something else. So, figure out what works for you, what doesn't work for you, and go with it. Have fun out there. Be safe. We have as well here some listener feedback from our first episode. So we got quite a few, actually. It was kind of cool to see the responses there from everybody. The first one, it's going to be a little bit of a feedback compared to the rest, are going to require a little bit more of a question answer kind of thing, is from Jason from Hope, Maine. So Jason, he said, "Hey, Tyler and Jimmy, loved the first episode, and I have a question. I just got my amateur radio license, KC1LKL, congratulations, which I've thanked Tyler for multiple times for inspiring me to get. Now on to installing a mobile in my 1997 80 series Land Cruiser, which, by the way, is one of my dream vehicles. So the question is, I have a roof rack and a fairly large rooftop tent, and wondering, is there a better place to install my antenna, or it really isn't going to matter that much? Not that it matters, but I'll be on a dual band 2 meter and 70 centimeter. Thanks, Jason." So, good question, Jason. First off, thanks for listening. Thanks for writing in, having an awesome question here. This is one of the ones I get asked all the time. It is the, like, premier question when installing a mobile radio in your vehicle. Obviously, the further up you can get your antenna, the better off it's going to be. But if it's going to get destroyed from opening up your rooftop tent, then that's not that big of an issue to move ham radio antennas lower on the vehicle.
Right.
Whereas like a CB antenna, if you can get a CB antenna way up there, it's awesome. And you really need to maximize the effectiveness of your CB antennas, whereas ham radio antennas, they don't really need to be maximized. They work pretty darn well. And that's just because of the frequencies that ham radios use during off-roading, that 2 meter, 70 centimeters. So, you can, if you want to put it up high, put it up high. It's going to work the best up there. But if you put it, say, like on a little L bracket, on one of the bolts from your hood, so it almost looks like an AM FM stereo antenna on your vehicle, that's going to work just fine as well with ham radio, or off of a rear tire carrier. If you have a tire carrier swing out that you've built on your vehicle, on your 80 series Land Cruiser, then putting the antenna on top of that will work just as well too. The nice thing about ham radio antennas is they don't need a big overextensive ground plane like CB antennas do. So you can put them on just about anything and just have a simple little ground connection, and it'll work great. So
let me probe you a little bit here. What if
okay, sorry, my mind's you know, I'm thinking back to ropes, tying lots of different knots, lubes, and then now probing. So I'm just okay,
not that way. What if you put it on your bumper and the whole antenna is below the roof line? And those 80 series, you know, are kept big, like a, you know, full box metal vehicle, just for, you know, if anybody's listening that doesn't know what the 80 series is like. So it would be hidden in a in a few directions.
Definitely, especially off your rear bumper. Your rear bumper is, if you put it down on your rear bumper and you have the full metal body of the vehicle blocking one direction, then yeah, the signal is not going to get out that direction very well.
Okay.
So essentially your signal won't get out in front of you very well, kind of thing, or whichever direction the car is to the antenna. So I would definitely say a front bumper would not be an issue though.
Okay.
Front bumper, front or fenders, one of the fenders. Yeah. I know, for Jeeps, that's a popular spot to put an antenna is on a fender kind of thing. So, but yeah, down low on a rear bumper, probably not the best place.
I mean, in essence, it is being blocked. It's not going to work as well going through the vehicle, right? You know, like the rule on the CBs is you want it as far away from the cab kind of as possible.
Yeah.
Right. And it's sort of similar, for Ham, it sounds like. So yeah, front bumper or hood. You know, or if you have room on the roof somewhere that's not going to interfere with the rooftop tent, then that'd be that most ideal.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Nice. Yeah, I know that I'm probably with mine. I'm looking at a bracket that you can attach underneath the hood hinge that wraps up, and then you can attach the antenna to that.
Yep. Yeah, those work really well. My only issue with those is, if you get too close to trees or bushes, they're depending on what style of antenna, how whippy it is, it could whip over and hit your windshield being that close. So that's my only concern with those. But if you don't really have that big of a concern, or if you keep the antenna down to like a 14 inch to 15 inch antenna, a quarter wave, you shouldn't have that issue. So,
okay.
Yeah. So good question. Thanks, Jason. We also had a guy, Valley Taco, on Instagram.
Yeah.
Apparently, just FYI, people liked my locker joke, okay?
I know. I don't like, we got a few comments about love the locker comment. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you guys are just fueling the fire right now. This is horrible.
It's fantastic. I love it.
No.
Keep the support coming in. So he said, Valley Taco said, more locker jokes, please. Another guy, Brushfire221, he said, loved it. Great having the Toyota chit chat. Can't wait for the next episode. Locker joke was epic. So
I know what you're doing here.
What?
You pretty much copied every comment that talked about your locker joke.
Pretty much. That's all the comments we need to hear. So. another person, a Boundless Taco, came up with a new nickname for you.
Yeah, I know.
Jimmy Hydrojet.
I know. We'll see if that one sticks. I've never done it since, and that was like when I was 18.
Yeah. We'll see if that one sticks or not.
Yeah.
Another person, it's Woo on Instagram. He said, LOL, you guys are such a dork. Good first, quote unquote, podcast, by the way. Looking forward to see what you guys do with it. One thing, screw the time limit. If the convo is still going well, nothing wrong with longer than an hour. Just as long as the chat tree is still bearing fruit, let it grow. Thumbs up. So
cool.
We'll see how people feel. This episode's gonna be a little bit longer too. So
yeah. And here we were thinking that if we did an episode a week, we'd talk less, but apparently not.
Nope. We just talked a lot.
I got one for you. This was Alec. He said, hey, Tyler, you mentioned you were passing through San Luis Obispo. I was wondering you made a detour to Oceana Dunes, aka Pismo Dunes. Just wondering, because I'm literally down here in Slo County.
Oh, that's cool. No, I was literally right next door. I could look out my hotel and see the dunes. I was there at Pismo Beach staying for the weekend. And then
it was a work event, though, right?
It was a work for the day job. So I couldn't really get out there and explore too much. I was in the RAV4. Mm-hmm. Which probably would not do very well on the beach and its little tiny tires. But yeah, I've been down to Pismo before. My family has property over there as well, so I'll get down there maybe once or twice a year. Mm-hmm. I really want to get out there for what is it called? Not Toyota Fest. It's I just had it. Turf and Surf.
Turf and Surf. Yeah. Yes,
I really want to get down there for Turf and Surf this year. So.
It's not far off from what do they call it now? Jeep Fest?
It's like the weekend before the weekend after the Jeep Pismo Beach Jeep Fest is what's called.
What it is.
So, we're going to try and get down there for Turf and Surf. I think that'd be a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Huge shout out goes out to everybody down at Oceana Dunes right now. There was just a big shooting down there.
Oh, really?
The two nights ago, two nights ago, something like that. 6 people were injured. Nobody's died.
Wow.
No deaths. But they apprehended the guy up in Oakland.
Really?
So they found him today. Yeah.
Dang.
But there, because of that, there's a lot and lot of flack that Oceano Dunes SVRA is getting And just the community, you know, there's been a big struggle down there with the sand. Mm-hmm. People move into the Pismo Beach area and they're like, there's sand everywhere and it's all caused because of the off-roaders right. out at Oceano Dunes.
It's not caused by the wind.
It's not caused by the wind or anything. It's like moving in next to an airport and saying, what the heck? There's planes here.
Yeah. or a fire station. Why are there always sirens going off?
Yeah. So, anyways, Oceano Dunes is getting a lot of flack right now because of the shooting that just happened down there. So if anybody can get on and if you're in the area, if you're not in the area, just give support to Oceano Dunes. We really don't want to see that place go away.
No.
It's a really awesome place. So, it's a very isolated incident. I don't think they've had like any kind of gun issues down there for a very, very long time. So if you see a public forum that's kind of out giving Oceano Dunes flack, kind of step up and, show them how awesome the people actually are down there, the regular yeah. people there. So, yeah, so Oceano Dunes is cool. I spent the weekend there in Pismo, San Luis Obispo, and I spent a day the afternoon over in Avila, in Avila Beach. That was nice, nice. And relaxing. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's what I was doing down there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's it. Did we have any more we wanted to hit on this week, or we have? I think we had a couple others, but we're going to save them for a future episode.
Yeah, we got a few more that are going to be great main topics.
Yeah.
So we'll save some of those for a little later date. We'll respond to you guys on the email, but we'll keep it for our main topic. We really appreciate everybody writing in, all the support mm-hmm. given. That was a really cool to see everybody. You know. Saying how much they appreciated and liked yeah. it, and you know it's fun. I'm having fun so far.
Yeah,
so
yeah, me too. We're 2 weeks into it. We'll see if it continues. No, yeah. So we got a lot of really fun, exciting things planned for the listeners out there. One thing that we're going to try and start doing, and we'll probably look at it the first week of June, is trying to do a monthly giveaway of some sort. So we're kind of figuring out the logistics and planning for that. But just to kind of get you guys excited and tease it a little bit, we're looking at starting that coming up here shortly. And then mm-hmm. we'll get all the details figured out and let you guys know whatever later on in the month here before we get into June. So yeah, we got a lot of plans. We got some other ideas we're playing around with to keep you guys kind of some entertaining non-listening to us things that you guys get to be engaged with out there. So
yeah,
it'll be fun. I think we're gonna move forward with everything here, and it's gonna be a great time. We're yeah. excited. So yeah, thanks for all the support definitely. Out there. If you need to get in touch with Jimmy or I, you can do that by emailing to podcast@snailtrail4x4.com. if you want to go to just me, to go to tyler@snailtrail4x4, or Jimmy is just jimmy@snailtrail4x4.com. And then if you want to learn about anything ham radio related, go on over to myoffroadradio.com. That's my website and kind of platform for teaching ham radio technician license classes and a couple other goodies stuff over there. And then also definitely go and check out the Snail Trail YouTube channel, youtube.com/snailtrail4x4, where you get to see all of the videos with Jimmy and me showing up every once in a while doing installs and showing you guys how to make Toyota vehicles more capable for off-roading. So with that, my friends, and especially the one here in the shop with me, any last words?
I really like our new shop hold down mic setup we got going.
We'll have to get a picture of this for the gram. And with that, everybody, keep crawling.